God, that's just the way it is. And you're on your throne. Thanks, Jack. Actually, that song fits real well with what we're going to talk about this evening. Is there really a God? There are a number of ways to approach answering this question. A number of which I really am not qualified to approach other than the fact of what somebody has told me. I know the earth sits on its axis at the right degree, the right distance from the sun, so it's not too cold, not too hot, and the seasons come and they go because of the setting that is there. And there are a great number of arguments that can be given from a scientific point of view and also from an evidentiary point of view that would then therefore support is there really a God. But at least for me, it comes down to something that I think is real practical for us. And I want to approach answering this question from the standpoint, is there really a God, from the standpoint of morality and religion? Because that seems to me that's where we're at. That's where we live in this world. Most of us don't live with the scientific arguments and the foreknowledge arguments that go with that scientific evidence. Most of us live in the day-to-day world with shoe leather to the pavement, dealing with the question of morality and God. Is there really a God? And answering that question from the standpoint of morality and religion. Thomas Jefferson, of course, our third president, posed these two questions centuries ago. Can the liberties of a nation be sure when we remove their only firm basis, a conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are a gift from God, that they're not to be violated but with His wrath? And in the day when national leaders were convicted that morality was indispensable for a nation to survive and that God was also indispensable for morality, George Washington, in his farewell address, said this of morality and religion, that they are two great pillars of human happiness and indispensable to private and public felicity or faithfulness. John Adams said that avarice, ambition, revenge would break the strongest cords of our Constitution as a whale goes through a net. Our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people. It's wholly inadequate. Pardon me, it's wholly inadequate to the government of any other. Now, in quoting these three past presidents, I'm not establishing the fact as a certainty with regard to the fact that morality proves there's a God. I'm simply using them to tell us and to show us that this is something that is not a new pattern of thought, a new habit of thought. And that also these founding fathers, while they had some thorns and fleas and ticks about them, they were not perfect men. And they were not necessarily all the way spiritually minded men. George Washington perhaps was more spiritually minded than he has been given credit for. But nonetheless, these were not men that you would have called what we would call necessarily spiritually minded men. But they did have a view toward God. And they recognized the place of God in the world and in our life and in the United States of America. And they recognized the place of God with regard to morality. And they recognized these two fundamental things. That it is assumed that morality and religion shake hands as Siamese twins together that cannot be parted. And therefore, it is incumbent upon everyone, therefore, to be lawful. Where there is lawlessness, then there is anarchy. There is chaos. The second thing that was assumed as a response to this particular kind of thinking was that it would speak of common values. That people would hold common values, hold values in common together. Yet we live in a world today where it seems like, on a practical basis even, not just from a theoretical discussion in an academic way in a classroom, but on a practical way on the streets we see today, the question from a practical basis, are we still living really under a nation of laws? I realize that we sometimes are called a democratic nation. That really is not true. We really are a republic. We are a republic. A republic is a nation that is governed by laws represented by their representatives. We're not even a representative democracy. Democracy is not of the people, by the people, and for the people, and the will of the people. It's a system of laws, a constitution, a bill of rights that therefore bind this nation together. And the real question then that we face, not just in our generation, but in every generation, are those laws going to be respected, or are we going to become a lawless society? And it's also assumed as an outgrowth of those that there will be values that we have in common one with another. And those things will become apparent as we roll forward a little bit further on. In 1980, and I realize that goes back a ways, but this tells you how far back the thinking went to change with regard to how God and morality were viewed. But in 1980, for some of us, that was just where we lived at that time. We were just in our world at that time. Others weren't even born. But in 1980, the United States Supreme Court struck down the right to have the Ten Commandments in classrooms. And the reason they said was because it may induce children to read, meditate upon, and perhaps to venerate and to obey the commandments. Now, for me and you, that would say, yes, of course, that would be an axiomatic thing to conclude, that if they read those commandments, naturally, we would want them to read those, to meditate upon them, and perhaps even to venerate them and to obey them. Yes, that's right. But to the secularist who opposes morality and religion, it was seen as an imposition, on their secular philosophy or secular values. And so, therefore, the Supreme Court struck that down. Where then, therefore, teachers cannot have in their classrooms the Ten Commandments. And so we want to pursue some things relative to what we then therefore have introduced and try to make some things practical for us today that help us, I hope, realize where we're at in this world and the real value that we hold in this world. The first question we want to ask is, can morality and religion be separate? The premise upon which the United States Supreme Court struck down the Ten Commandments in a classroom was that in our Constitution it states that government shall not establish a religion or enforce any religion thereof. And therefore it was concluded that there was a separation of church and state as a result of separating those two. That was never the purpose of that particular amendment in the Constitution. There was never the thought with regard to the Founding Fathers there would be the separation of church and state. What it says is, the state shall not then therefore authorize a religion as a state religion and therefore enforce it. But the secularist says that if you take those Ten Commandments and put them in a classroom, what you then therefore are doing, also in the halls of government, court buildings, courtyards, is what you're doing then is you are imposing your religion on others, and the state is enforcing that. Of course, our Constitution and Bill of Rights grew out of a revolt that was just that. It was a state-enforced religion. When our founding fathers found themselves on the shores that what became the United States of America, it was a revolt against the King of England and his enforcement of religion. And so our founding fathers recognized that government had no place, number one, in establishing a religion, and number two, enforcing that religion. The United States Supreme Court then took the next jump. And they said to therefore put those commandments in a classroom or in government, therefore instituted a religion on the part of state and therefore enforced that. And therefore, there was a separation of church and state. But when we look at that, there is no morality without religion. Just think about that for a moment. There is no morality without religion. Atheists can't establish morality. Atheists have no standard, no basis upon which to establish morality. Secularists who would have their way, and when I say secularists, I mean people who have no place for God in this world. Secularists then, having their way, would then have us be a lawless, meaningless, and despairing kind of society. William Penn said, if we're not willing to be governed by God, we shall be governed by tyrants. And in fact, world history is full of that. Well, history is full of that. When nations have left off being governed by God and morality, then therefore there's somebody that rose up and therefore enforced a standard upon that society. We've seen that sprinkled, dotted across the landscape of our historical horizon. When you go back to Hitler and the German rule, the rule of Germany, it was a revolt at that time against this very thing, in which Hitler himself stood up and said, "I will give you law and I will give you morality." The problem was, it was going to be law and morality as Hitler viewed law and morality, not as God viewed law and morality. And so, David Hume said, no society can exist, David Hume, an atheist, on the basis of having no God, because then he says that murder just becomes an excitement of passion. Did you get that? Where there's no morality because there's no God, murder simply becomes an excitement of the passions. In other words, if there's no morality, there's no God, there's no standard, then what's to keep you from committing murder? It just is an excitement of the passions. And therefore, how can you be prosecuted for that? Because it's just, after all, an excitement of the passions. Will Durant offered this: "We shall find no easy task to mold a natural ethic strong enough to maintain moral restraint and social order without the support of supernatural consolations, hopes, and fears. There's no significant example in history before our time or of a society successfully maintained moral life without the aid of religion." Now, Will Durant was not saying that to bolster religion. Will Durant is saying that to therefore give evidence of the fact that when there is no God, no morality, therefore society will therefore become chaotic. And so, it is incumbent upon us then to illustrate that morality and that religion. The Lord said it this way: "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your God in heaven." I'm going to come back to this point in the conclusion, but I want to make this point just now. David Hume will say there is no God, and therefore there's no moral values, and therefore murder is an excitement of the passions. Will Durant says there's no society that has survived long without God and morality. But isn't it true? Isn't it true when we say there is a God, that we behave immorally, that what we have done is we have then therefore given support to what David Hume and Will Durant have affirmed? Oh, we will say loud and long, we will preach in our pulpits, we will stand in our classrooms and we will teach our kids there is a God. And we'll talk about there is a God, but do we let our light shine? Are we the salt of the earth? Or have we become immoral people in our immorality then, practically, not theoretically, but practically have supported the fact there is no God? Have we not then therefore supported David Hume and Will Durant when therefore we say there is a God, but our hearts are filled with hatred, or our hearts are filled with envy, or our hearts are filled with lust, and we not only have our hearts filled with that, we act upon that? Don't you see that includes us? Don't you see, we affirm, I realize I'm preaching to the choir this evening relative to this. We affirm there is a God, and we affirm, we know you can't separate God and religion, but do we then act like we can separate God and religion in the way that we live? And I think that's a serious question that we need to ask ourselves. When we see people who are to be people of God, then act like people of the world and their morality, as though there is no God, though they say there is a God, we then therefore affirm from a practical basis there is a separation between morality and religion, and God has no place in it. The second thing I want us to ask ourselves then is, why do people need to believe? Why do people need God to believe in a moral ethic? Why do people need God to believe in a moral ethic? In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, you have this statement of Paul. Now, Paul wasn't talking about this particular subject in 1 Corinthians 1. He's talking about something totally different, although Corinth would be similar to what we're talking about as a society. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this age? Has God not made foolish the wisdom of this world? The reason we need God and morality is because of the foolishness of this world. This world lacks wisdom. This world lacks direction. David Hume will further say, stealing is not wrong. It's just negative feelings. Well, if stealing's not wrong, and murder's simply exciting the passions and their negative feelings, then doesn't that say something about the lack of wisdom that man has? Man needs God because man needs God's wisdom, because man has proven his foolishness without God. Man needs that stamp of approval, that stamp of God's wisdom, first of all. The second thing I would suggest with regard to that is that man often lacks perspective as well. Man often lacks perspective. For example, a fellow by the name of Ludwig Wittgenstein said this: if a man could write a book on ethics, this book would, with an explosion, destroy all of the books in the world. Ethics, if it is anything, is supernatural, and our words will express only the facts. Did you get that? Wittgenstein said, if a man could write a book on ethics, his book would, with an explosion, destroy all the other books in the world. And I would affirm to you, there is a book that's written like that. And I would affirm to you that there is a book that has exploded all other books in the world. And there is a book that is full of ethics. And it is a book that is produced by the supernatural. But what Wittgenstein is affirming here is, he is affirming, therefore, that there's no such book that would exist. Man then therefore lacks that perspective. And man lacking that perspective, who can determine whether what is truth or what is a lie? For example, you take the consequences of what Wittgenstein has said there. Is lying really wrong? And by the way, does lying really hurt? And is lying only wrong because lying hurts? Well, if we say lying is wrong because lying hurts, then that's not absolutely true. Because there's time in which dishonesty has kept a wrong from taking place. Now, that's not justifying dishonesty, but simply saying that lying is wrong because it hurts is not true, because dishonesty doesn't always hurt. Dishonesty is not right, but it doesn't always hurt. But how can you determine what is the truth or what is the lie or what is a lie? If what the atheist does and what the secularist does is say, what we're going to do is we are going to determine what is good for all humanity, then upon what basis are they going to determine what is good for all humanity? And once man determines what is good for humanity, does that not then speak to the fact that man is made in the image of God? For example, in the first question we ask, can morality and religion be separate? And someone might ask with regard to that, can the atheist do good? And the answer to that is yes. Well, when the atheist does good, the answer is he can do good. Doesn't that then therefore prove that the atheist can do good without God? No, what it proves is the atheist, regardless of what he admits or not, proves there is a God. Because his doing good then therefore says he is made in the image of God. Because if there is a good and if there is a bad, if there is a right and there's a wrong, then therefore there must be some objective standard by which that right or wrong is judged. And that doesn't come from the moral secularist. Because the moral secularist will say, we will set the human values for everybody. Now play with that just a moment. Let's not run by that real quickly. Let's play with that just a little bit. The humanist is going to say, we're going to set the moral values for everyone. So what if we set the moral value? What if we set the moral value that says, nobody can commit murder. Nobody in this room can commit murder. God didn't say that. That's what we collectively as a humanity have defined. No man can commit murder. But one man commits murder. Then what law has he violated? It only is a result of his excited passions. If, for example, we say that man can't steal, we collectively conclude, well, humanity, man can't steal. But someone steals. What law has he violated? How can he be prosecuted for that? After all, it's just a result of his negative feelings. Where's the wrong? It's not wrong simply because of bad results. And there's no wrong that has been established on the basis of any law that has been established by a greater being, supernatural being like God. Where are you going to establish that? Now let's bring that down a little bit more. Do you not see where The secularist leads with that. How does that affect abortion? How does that affect homosexuality? How does that affect the discussion going on today of gender neutrality? How are we going to determine whether that child in the womb is really a human life or not, when we collectively decide that it is not a living human being? And therefore, a woman has the right to control her own body. And controlling her own body, she therefore can dispose of that which is an encumbrance to her as though it is simply a piece of garbage to be disposed of. Who's to say that's wrong? And homosexuality. Who's to say that one is not predisposed in a gender kind of way? And therefore, we have decided as a society, therefore, as a human value, humanists have decided from a secular moral point of view that homosexuality is not a sin. It's not against God because there is no God. There is no God, therefore there's no morality. And humanists have decided with their secular values, which they cannot establish, by the way, that therefore homosexuality is nothing wrong with that. And who's to say that my gender is what I look like? I mean, just because I look male doesn't mean that's what I identify with as a male. And who's to say that looking male means that I therefore must behave male? Who's to determine that? Don't you see how the humanist has taken this from the secular point of view and tried then therefore to impose a set of rules, aberrant though they may be, to determine that this is open because there is no morality, because there is no God. Without God, there's no meaning to life, nor is there responsibility for our behavior. Therefore, there's no values, and there's no one to whom we are accountable to. It is simply our mere opinion. So what we preach relative from God's word is either simply the words of men that have been handed down through the process of time. Jesus was just a man, no more than a man, just like us. There were things that were reputed that he did, but he's just a man. And it's just your opinion that homosexuality is wrong. It's just your opinion that you need to use a facility that is gender specific. Because who are you to say, I'm not who I feel like I am? And who are you to say that I'm not made that way? I'm not made like you. And by the way, we could apply the same thing to heterosexual immorality, couldn't we? Who's to say that here is a man and here's this pretty woman, or here's this woman and this handsome man, and she says, there's no law against that. It's just merely my opinion. It's merely your opinion. It's your opinion that I can't do that. And therefore, there's no one to count. There's no God. There's no law. There's no morality. There's no one to whom you're accountable to. I'm accountable to. And then, therefore, there's no responsibility. In the 19th century, Thomas Huxley embraced a similar form of reductionist kind of thought. He believed that just as the noise of a babbling brook is only a byproduct of the rushing water, so the mind is simply a byproduct of the brain. The mind is one thing, the brain is another thing. What you have is the babbling brook is one thing, the rushing water is another thing. So the mind is simply a byproduct of the brain. Just as a babbling brook cannot influence the rushing water, so the mind cannot influence the brain. He believed the thoughts were the expression of molecular change. Now think about that just a moment. Think about what Huxley had said. The mind cannot influence the brain, so therefore, I'm not responsible for what I think. Why? Because matter can't think. Well, if matter can, if the secularist can determine there's a right or wrong, then what has the secularist said? The secularist has said matter can think. But they know that matter can't think. Well, if matter can't think, then I can't control what I think. What I think is just the result of physical and chemical balances coalescing together. I have no control over my thoughts and therefore over my behavior. And what I think then therefore is dependent upon a chemical reaction of calcium and phosphorus acting together in my brain. I can't control what I think. I'm not responsible for what I'm thinking. The brain is one thing. My mind and what I think is another. I can't control that. So who's to say one combination of chemical reaction is wrong, another combination of chemical reaction is not wrong? All thoughts then therefore are morally neutral. Why? Because there is no morality. Doesn't that strike you as just something that for us would be absolutely absurd? Because God says, and here's the alternative to this, God says man is spirit, soul, and mind. And there's the alternative. The human secularist says, with regard to that, that the brain is one thing and the mind is the other thing, and there is no soul and mind. A fellow by the name of Pierre Cabanis said, the brain secretes thoughts as the liver secretes bile. We don't control the quality of the bile, so we don't control the quality of our thoughts either. Man then therefore is not accountable for what he thinks. Humanists argue then therefore, based upon what they think is best for the human race, then therefore there is a religion that is apart from the origin of God. And the origin of that religion is in the mind of man. Now, in the beginning I said, the founding fathers assumed that a society would be operating upon a system of laws and a system of values. You not see in what we have done with this already is what we've done is thrown out laws and human values. Human life becomes cheap. It is a disposable commodity. It is to be used at your whim and my whim. Your rights are not your rights unless I determine they are your rights. They are my rights. They are the rights that I determine. And so we get to determine the morality, not God. If it's just chemical reactions, then where's the control of the thought? Where is the sense of value? There is no value. It speaks not of less value. It speaks of no value. Therefore, all activities are the same. Drunkenness is the same. Abortion is the same. Murder is the same. Homosexuality is the same. There is no dignity with man without the view of God. Man is reduced to simply a coalescence of chemical reactions with regard to how he thinks. Now, when you think about the evolutionary process, and the evolutionary process, this is an abbreviated oversimplification of it, is a result of some burp in some pond at a certain temperature of which some amoeba arose and then therefore evolved to be like me and you. Is it any wonder then that a three-year-old baby would fall into the Cincinnati Zoo and a gorilla would take that baby and would then slam that baby against the wall and throw the baby in the water? Why? Because the gorilla's doing what a gorilla does. Well, who determines what that gorilla does is wrong? Why did they shoot that gorilla to kill that gorilla? Why over the weekend did they do that? Because somebody determined that gorilla had no right to treat that baby that way. Well, somebody imposed a law, didn't they? How did they determine that the life of that gorilla was less valuable than the life of that baby? Was it because humanity determined that? No. Because there was an uproar over the fact that the zoo people shot and killed the gorilla. However the baby fell, I don't know. That's another argument. But the baby fell into the gorilla's cage, his compound, and the gorilla took the baby and was slamming the baby against the wall. Who's to say that gorilla's wrong? And by the way, what gave those zookeepers the right to shoot and kill that gorilla? Those who are rising up with regard to these kind of values aren't rising up because the baby's being killed. They're rising up because the gorilla was killed. Don't you see how that leaves us without values? That then takes us to the demise of our human values. It's not me and you. It's not we. We are just its. We are just its. it. Wendell Holmes, Supreme Court Justice, said this in 1902 to 1932 is when he ruled. He said, "I see no reason for attributing to man a significant difference in kind from that which belongs to a baboon or a grain of sand. I believe our personality is a cosmic ganglion. Just as when certain rays meet and cross, there is white light at the meeting point." In other words, we just happen to cross at the right time in the right place. And that baby just happened to be in the wrong time in the wrong place. Abortion, infanticide, euthanasia become products then of evolutionary value. What's to say they're wrong? What's to say infanticide is wrong? What's to say that therefore euthanasia is wrong? When you have on the West Coast, in the Upper West Coast, in Seattle and Oregon, where euthanasia has been established as something that is lawful in those states, who's to say that what they have passed in those states is wrong? Where's the value of human life? Do you not see where this began back in 1973 when the United States Supreme Court, Roe v. Wade, found in favor of abortion? That was not where it was intended to stop. Where it's intended to stop is this. Is that when you get old enough and you have no value to this society, then being of no value to this society, you then and therefore and I therefore are simply disposable commodities having used up our usefulness. Because why? We're not heart, soul, and mind. We're just a byproduct of chemical reactions. And we're just a part of the evolutionary process that just happened to intersect this period of time. Life has no value. Without God, there's no recognition of worth, and there's no recognition of value. We then, therefore, are reduced simply to be glorified machines. Bertrand Russell, a famous British atheist, described man as being morally the product of causes which had no provision of the end they were achieving. His origin, his growth, his hopes and fears, his loves and his beliefs are but the outcome of accidental collocations of atoms, blind to good and evil, reckless of destruction, omnipotent matter rolls on its relentless way. Did you get that last part? Omnipotent matter. Matter is all powerful and matter can think and it rolls on its relentless way. Russell simply says this, we are nothing but disposable commodities. We are nothing but human machines. What if we're human machines and that's all we are, it's, then why are we concerned with marital fidelity? Why are we concerned with raising our children with a respect for what is right or what is wrong? Because what is right and what is wrong, there's no absolute. We've thrown away the absolutes. Who's to say your son hitting my son is wrong? Who's to say your daughter cutting in front of my daughter in line is wrong? Who's to say that you taking one life and me taking another life is wrong? Where is the human value of that? Where is God in that? Don't you see, with the atheist morality, what we have done is we destroy God and we therefore destroy ourselves. Imagine this. A teeter-totter. But the teeter-totter is over the Grand Canyon. And there are men of equal weight on the teeter-totter. But one, gaining his balance on the teeter-totter, pulls out his gun and shoots the other one. And as he shoots the other one, he falls off his end of the teeter-totter. What happens to the guy that shot the gun on his end of the teeter-totter? He falls off as well, doesn't he? Don't you see that what this says, what the atheist view of morality says is that we are self-destructing. We are destroying ourselves. How can there be anybody that's trustworthy? How can there be anybody that's caring? How can there be anybody that is moral? How can there be anybody in the image of God? There's no God. There's no man that is left to respect God. Man is left to his own devices. And if man is left to his own devices, then what's to say what I have determined and you have determined is wrong? Now just pause a moment in view of all that. Can we not see in our world, not just the United States of America, what is happening when nations take God out of their society? Can we not see the human brutality that takes place? Can we not see how cheap life is? Can we not see how disposable a woman's body is at the behest of a man who wants his way with the carnage of war and terrorism? Can we not see in our own nation the spiraling demise that is a result of taking God out of our world, and those who make laws that remove God from our world? Can we not see the immoral consequences as a result of that? Your children and my children understand fundamentally from the earliest age there's a right and there's a wrong. A two-year-old at a birthday party receives a toy. And that two-year-old, unwrapping that toy, begins to play with it. But another two-year-old comes and takes that toy away. The two-year-old who received that gift begins to cry, because that two-year-old understands, my toy was taken away. The two-year-old took it away, said, what he wants is of no value. What I want is of more value. I want that toy. I'm going to take that toy. But as parents, what do we often do? We step in and say, give him back his toy. Give him back his toy. And then we say, you need to learn to share. You need to learn to share. Do not our children understand from the earliest ages there's something that is right? There's something. Did humanity determine that? Where does that come from? Doesn't that come from the fact that we are created in the image of God and created in the image of God, that if there were no laws that were written relative to what is right and what is wrong, that we by human nature would understand there are laws that are right and wrong according to human nature? Listen to Paul in the book of Romans, chapter 2. Romans chapter 2. He says, for when the Gentiles, verse 14, who do not have the law, that's the codified law, by nature do the things in the law, in the codified law, although not having the law, are a law unto themselves, who show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness between themselves and their thoughts, accusing or excusing them in the day when God will judge the secrets of men by Jesus Christ according to the gospel. Man has a conscience, and that conscience either approves or excuses what man has done. And what the secularist wants to do, as per these quotes that we've given and what we've discussed in this lesson, is they want to totally remove man from the conscience of God so that it's up to the egalitarian society. And what egalitarian means is everybody's equal. Everybody gets a turn. Everybody gets their way. There's no male. There's no female. There's no child. There's no adult. Everybody gets their way. You don't have a right to discipline your child because that child has rights. And you don't have the right to impose your parental will on that child. It's all egalitarian. It's all that we're going to all share the same way until and unless you cross my line. Now, when you cross my line, who's to say that I'm wrong then, therefore, for putting you back on your side of the line? No society has existed, no society survives, not because there's an $18 trillion debt. That may be massive enough. But that's not why societies fail. Societies fail because we remove God. And societies succeed because God is paramount in the thoughts of that society. Maybe not everybody is what we would call a New Testament Christian, but there is a respect and a fear for God, and there's respect and a fear for what God values.
And there's a respect and a fear for the name of God. There's a respect and a fear for human life. And there's a respect and a fear for human property. And there's a respect and a fear for your mate being your mate and my mate being my mate. There's a respect and a fear for the fact that you don't come and steal what is mine, and I don't come and steal what is yours. Because to do so is to violate the will of the Almighty God. Morality proves there is a God. Just look at what happens when morality tries to separate religion from it. And it proves that there is a God. Why is adultery wrong? Because there's a God. Why is homosexuality wrong? Because there is a God. Why are we who we are made to be? Because there is a God. Why is taking innocent human life wrong? Because there is a God. Why is hatred wrong? Because there is a God. Why do we worship? Because there's a God. And that's just the way it is. On His throne ruling today. We can play fast and loose with it. But God gets the last word. And there's one thing for sure. One day, every secular humanist, every atheist is going to recognize one absolute thing. There is a God. And they're going to bow before Him and confess Him. And they're not going to change His law. And they're not going to vote Him out of office. He's eternal. And He is sovereign. And He's the God we serve. And the God who gives order to our lives and meaning and purpose and value. Is there really a God? Absolutely. And aren't you thankful that there is? If we can help in some way this evening, encourage you to do what is right before God, I invite you to come while we stand and while we sing.